Good morning. Last week, we began discussing the parameters of Dina d'Malchus HaDina. I'm just going to briefly summarize, and then we're going to get to the actual practical halacha l'maisa. We pointed out that there are three basic categories of laws. The first category is a law which is passed l'hanoas ha-melech. Taxation is the simplest example. And here, everyone agrees, dina d'malchus adina, a government has the right to impose taxes, a government needs to impose taxes, and such laws would definitely be governed by the rules of dina d'malchus adina. The place can extend it to currencies. Currency was something that a king was in charge of the currency, he profited from the currency, and therefore it's in the same category. And then already there are others that extend it to cases involving, you know, kinyonim or transferring real estate, and the different svaras that because the king collects taxes from the real estate, it's in his interest or he needs to keep track of who the owner is. Similarly, there's a svara that if there was a stamp tax, if they collected money from every document, then they have the right to insist that all documents be executed in front of the court. So there's a discussion over how far it goes, but something which is l'hanoas ha-melech, if the law is there for the benefit of the government, there everyone agrees dina d'malchus ha-dina will apply. The second category, jumping to the other extreme, was the case of arkois. If you have a private civil dispute between two Jews, so there the poskim will say, if there is a conflict between chosh and mishpat and between the dina d'arkois, we follow chosh and mishpat. There are a number of reasons that are given. It's in the times of the Rishayim, the arkois were not set up by the king. It was just a separate branch of government. The arkois would follow common law or their religious law. It wasn't actually the king's authority or it wasn't a law that was passed by the king. So therefore you would not say dina malchus adina. Others say that even if the king would get involved with such laws, since it was not a traditional power of the king's, a king is not necessarily allowed to add additional powers or pass laws in additional areas, and that's why some poskim rejected dina malchus adina. And lastly, and the last svara is that for dina malchus adina, we've had two svaras. One is when it's hanoas ha-melech, which is when the king has a benefit, he's allowed to pass a law. The second category, which we'll discuss soon, is when it's l'tevas m'nei ha-medina. When, even if the king has no direct interest, but if this law is needed for society to function, it's l'tevas m'nei ha-medina. So there the government also has the right to pass laws. If you're dealing with a private dispute, and halacha says one thing, rejecting halacha in favor of an alternate set of rules is not considered l'tevas m'nei ha-medina. There's nothing wrong with halacha, there's nothing wrong with chosh and mishpat, and therefore, to say, instead of following the chosh and mishpat, let's follow a different set of rules, that is not l'tevas m'nei ha-medina. Since it's not l'tevas m'nei ha-medina, it's not l'tevas ha-melech, therefore, there will be no dina d'malchus ha-dina. So this is the second class, the category that's called arkois, and here everyone agrees there is no dina d'malchus ha-dina. The third category is where a rule which is the takanas b'nei ha-medina. It's a rule which the king doesn't have any direct interest, but it's a rule that's good for society. It's good for people. So here the Ramah says we say dina d'malchus ha-dina. There are many Rishonim, there are a number of Gemaras which we went through last week, which extend dina d'malchus ha-dina to cases where it does not seem to be l'hanoas ha-melech. And therefore, the gedder that the Ramah gives it, based on Ma'arik, is that it has to be l'tevas m'nei ha-medina. If it's good for society, we will apply dina d'malchus ha-dina, even though it really does not directly impact the melech.
What's the difference?
Oh, very good. So what is the difference between arkois and l'tevas m'nei ha-medina? The Shach asks this kasha. The Shach says that, he takes it a step further. He says, first of all, dina d'malchus ha-dina cannot override a halacha. Second of all, if Tevis Menei HaMedina is enough to apply Dina Malchus HaDina against Chosh and Mishpat, he says every law that's passed is there with Tevis Menei HaMedina. It's all there to help things work out. And therefore the Shach says, according to the Ramah, Dina Malchus HaDina should apply to everything. And because of this, the Shach argues in the Ramah. Now as far as Pshat in the Ramah, or at least Pshat in the Ramah's Mahalik, it doesn't necessarily stem with the Ramah, so we mentioned four different Mahalchim. The first was the Chazon Ish, who is arguing on the Ramah, but what he says is that it depends on whether the Malchus is Matmid. Zog the Chazon Ish, that if you're dealing with a private dispute, if you're dealing with a private matter, the government does not care whether you follow Halacha or whether you follow Chosh and Mishpah. He says, Adarav, the government is very happy if the parties agree to arbitrate. You're not doing anything wrong by agreeing to follow Chosh and Mishpah. You're not doing anything illegal. And therefore, Zog the Chazon Ish, based on Rabbeinu Yoina, whenever there's a private dispute between two Jews, we will never apply Dina Malchus Adina. That's always a concept of our Kais. We will always follow Chosh and Mishpah. That being said, if it involves a Jew with a Goy, there he says the Malchus very often is Machbid. Therefore, the Malchus does not want people ignoring their laws, even their civil laws. And there he says there is the Dina Malchus Adina would apply. Furthermore, the Mashmois is, and this is really how he answers the different Gemaras that we mentioned last week, that if for some reason there's a Kpeda, there's a specific law where the Malchus insists, this is a matter of public policy, we don't want anyone going ahead and ignoring it and applying their own set of rules. So if there is a Kpeda from the Malchus, there Dina Malchus Dina would apply, even though it's a private matter between two Jews. Now based on that, the Chazon Ish and the Rebbeinu Yoina both say that in a case where there's a fight between a machlokes between two Jews, and al pidin, what should they do? They should go to Beis Din and they should follow halacha. One of them decides to go shaloi kedin. He goes to Arkois, and the court issues a ruling. Even though that was shaloi kedin, even though it was aser, once there is a verdict from the Arkois, he says there it's clear the machlokes is makbid, that when there's a verdict that you respect it. And therefore, he says, the verdict would be binding in halacha, even though they had no right to go there, to go to Arkois in the first place. Now, it'll come out that Midin Shemayim, the person who forced it to Arkois, will be Chayiv Midin Mazik, because by bringing it to court, where there will be a different set of rules applied, and once it's done, there's no way to reverse it, you're a Mazik, you're causing the other person damage. But as far as the actual verdict itself, since the Malchus is Makbid and they have the right to be Makbid, there we would apply the idea of Dina Malchus Adina.
What happens in a case where the Beis Din let you go, but when the judgment, they added something on of their own, so like, for instance, like the court cause? The Beis Din never said you could get the court cause.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. In Simen Chavav, there is the Nesivus brings down a Shiloh, what happens then? There's what happens if you go to court, Bedin, and you get more than you're entitled to alpi halacha. So there the halacha is Beis Din is ein nizkakim. Beis Din does not get involved to force the victor to return the excess money. And the question is why? Is it a knas? Is it, since the other person forced it to Arkois as a knas, he forced it to go to civil law, so now let him suffer the consequences? Or is it just a question that Beis Din doesn't deal with the matter? But Latif Sidei Shemayim, if he wants to know what his real obligation is, he should have to return the money. Based on this Rebbeinu Yoina, you can really argue a third approach. You could say that even though al pi halacha, this person is right, once it goes to court and there's a court order, now already, because of Dina de Malchus Adina, we have to respect that. Normally, you can be considered a mazik because you had no right to go to Arkois in the first place. Over here, you're not. You had the right to go. You had the right to go because you have a heter arkois. The other person was Messiah of Ladin. So according to this, Rebbeinu Yoina, it may come out that you'd be entitled to keep the extra money. I didn't see anyone that says it. It's a chiddush, but it should come out like that. So this is the first approach. This was the Rebbeinu Yoina. Chazon Ish follows this halacha l'maisa, which, if you think about it, it's a chumrah and it's a kula. On one hand, what we're saying is basically every law out there, If there's a private dispute, we ignore all civil laws. Because today, the government is very happy for people to go to arbitration. They have no kpeda, it doesn't bother them. And since it doesn't bother them, we should ignore every law out there on the books when it's a private matter involving two Jews. Mitzad Sheni, as far as the theory, what Rabbeinu Yoni seems to be saying, is that if the Malchus is Makbid, even though it's inherently a private matter between two Jews, if for some reason they have a kpeda, like his example is where it already went to court, and it's very reasonable for a government to say, we expect all of our subjects to respect the court verdict. So in that case, even though it's a private matter, it's a straight out our case, still, Rabbi Yonah says, the concept of dino machus dino will apply. So this was the shita of the Chazon Ish. Another mahalach that we mentioned was that the case of our kohes is when there's a set of civil laws. Because al pi halacha we have a seder ha-yerusha. Al pi halacha we have rules about what kind of edos, what kind of testimony is accepted, what's considered a good proof, what isn't. So if you have an alternate set of laws, of civil laws, that is our kohes, and that we will not have toikif in halacha. Mitzad sheni, if there's a particular circumstance, there's a crisis, there's a problem, and to resolve the problem, the government passes a law. So that is not something which is against halacha, because it's not a halacha issue. It's a question of we have a problem, this is how to solve the problem. So in such a case where there's a takana to resolve an issue, a crisis, we do not have the shach's problem of being against halacha. That would not be considered our kohes, and there we would apply the idea of dina d'malchus adina. Now, Chassam Sofer adds that if the crisis or the problem is something that we see Chazal were concerned about, where Chazal made their own takanas, so then certainly if a government needs to make a new takana or a different takana in order to deal with the matter, Chassam Sofer, we would certainly say dina d'malchus adina, and this would not be considered our kohes. The Gros Moshe took this concept a step further. Gros Moshe's approach is that although our koyis is not binding, that is a private dispute, something which is a specific issue between two private people. However, Zok the Gros Moshe, there are many laws where there's a need to have a uniform law that applies to everyone. His example is bankruptcy, when you're distributing the assets. There, all the creditors are bali dinim. They all have an interest here. There has to be some uniform mechanism how we distribute the assets among all the creditors. Since there are many parties involved, there'll be Jews, there'll be goyim, it involves a tzibur. There, that's called tkanas mani hamedina, to have one set of rules that governs everyone. However, if the issue is just a private issue between two people, where what we do, whether we follow halacha or whether we follow civil law, doesn't make a difference to the malchus. It doesn't make a difference to the tzibur. There, the Gros Moshe says that would be our kohes, and there we would not apply dina malchus adina. The last mahalach is that we mentioned way back that one of the pshatim of dina malchus adina, one of the reasons why there's an obligation to listen to the malchus, is because they own the country, and this is the rent that you're paying to live in the country. Based on that, there are poskim that say that a rule, a civil rule that involves the use of land, there we will say dina malchus adina. It's their property. They can tell you how to use it. However, issues that do not involve land, unless it's the hanas amelech, we will not say dina malchus adina. Now, if you look through the gemaras that discuss dina malchus adina, that extend it to other cases, virtually all of them involve real estate. And therefore, according to this mahalach, it's only by real estate we will extend dina malchus adina to areas that are not l'hanas hamelech. But anything else, anything not involving real estate, it has to be l'hanas hamelech, and otherwise we will not say dina malchus adina.
We say that by democracy also. They don't own
right, so that we discuss then. According to some poskim, it's clear they don't have to actually own it. The fact that they have control over it may be enough. And we also pointed out from the Avinezer that they own the roads, they own the public spaces, and therefore anyone who wants to use the roads or use the public areas will likely have the same problem of the run. This is the rent; this is the price you pay for living in the country and for using the public areas. Okay, so now that we have a basic overview of where we apply the rule of dina malchus adina, let's start discussing actual examples. The first example that we'll discuss is rent control. Now, normally, if you own an asset, you have the right to rent it out. If you rent it out, you have the right to charge whatever you want. Rent control laws are what? Rent control laws are essentially they're generally two sets of laws, which obviously need both of them work together. The first rule is they have limitations on how much you can raise your rent. Very often, even though the market may go up, even though you're able to get a higher rent from someone else, The Malchus will say there's a cap, there's a limit to how much you can raise the rent, you know, whatever the number is, 2%, 5%, and you can't raise it above that. Now, in addition, there's always a second law that you cannot evict a tenant for no reason. I mean, if you want to move in, you generally could, but to evict one tenant just to rent it to another tenant, that you cannot do. And these, you need both laws together, because if the rule was if you can't raise the rent, but you could evict the tenant, then the rule is kind of meaningless. Anytime you want to raise the rent, you'll just kick out the tenant, and then the new tenant you'll charge that comes in, you'll be able to charge the higher rent. So what is the toikiv in halacha? If there is a rent control law, assuming the landlord and the tenant are both Jewish, are they obligated to follow these rules? So there are a number of tshuvas about the matter. The David Misharim, which you have in the Maamar Mekaymus today, says most certainly yes. He says that rent control rules are takanas b'nei hamedina. Without rent control rules, people would take advantage of tenants. It's both difficult and expensive to move out once you're in a unit. So a landlord could just take advantage of the fact that he has the tenant over the barrel, and he could just rip him off. In addition, there were times where there were shortages of housing, and without rent control rules, there would be tremendous instability. People would constantly be forced to move from unit to unit. And therefore, the David Meisharim says it's a takanas mei hamedina, and dina machusadina will apply. He adds that based on the chasam sefer that we said before, that since there's a problem over here today, or at least when he was writing it, there's a shortage of units, and if you don't have rent control, there will be serious problems. So in a place where we need to make a takana, there the Chassam Sefer says, everyone agrees that if the government makes a takana, they make a rule, dina machusa dina will apply. And therefore, the maskana of David Meisharim is, they're certainly enforceable in halacha, and you cannot even say kimli like the other shittos, and that's it. End of story. Now, ma'adip shittulei to the David Meisharim, the Imre Yosher, who is Rav Meir Arik, the author of Minchas Pitim, he was less clear about the psak. And Rav Yosher points out that it is a takanas b'nei hamedina. It's a good idea, it's a reasonable law, it makes sense. But we mentioned before that while the Ramah says takanas b'nei hamedina has dina de machusadina, the Shach argues. The Shach says that anything which is keneged halacha, anything which is, even if it's l'tevis b'nei hamedina, unless it's l'hanas ha-melech, we do not say dina machusadina. So he says it's a machlokes. He actually says, in one of the tshuvas, he says, the sugi d'yalma is like the shach. If it's a machlokes, l'chor, you can say kimli. The muchzik should be able to win. And this leads us to the next question. Who is the muchzik on a fight between a landlord and a tenant? So on one hand, the property certainly belongs to the landlord. On the other hand, he wants to get rent from the tenant. So this is a tremendous machlokes. The meryosha is mefalpel back and forth. There, svar as lakan. He does not have a clear hachra. But at the end he says, because it is a good takana, and he adds that the takana involves real estate, and as we mentioned before, when you're dealing with real estate, there's a stronger argument of dinu machusadina, because the land belongs to him. Therefore, Imre Yosher says, misafik, the rent control rules are enforceable, and the landlord cannot evict the tenant, and he cannot force him to pay additional rent. It's only misafik. The other side is that everyone agrees that this asset doesn't belong to him. It belongs to the landlord. So if the property belongs to the landlord, and we have a suffix, what gives the tenant the right to remain in the apartment? The landlord said you can only stay if you pay this amount of rent. So what gives the right to stay there and pay the lower amount? So again, that's a machlokes when we get to Kol HaTivi. So there's a lot of back and forth, but Imre Yosher's bottom line is that he calls this machlokes of by takanas b'nei hamedina, he says, is seka d'dina. But I'll call upon him in this case, where it involves karka, where it's a good takano, and it's likely the person's a mubzik, he says you can't raise the rent, you can't force him out.
Was there a contract signed before he moved into the
apartment? I don't believe discusses it, but it wouldn't make a difference.
So if
Dina Malchus Adina says you can't raise the rent, then generally Dina Malchus Adina cannot be waived. Because if you could waive it... Okay, so that leads us to another question. Can you be Moichel Adina de Malchus Adina if the Malchus Gufa says you can't be Moichel? Now, David Mesharim says that if they do waive it, in the contract they waive their rights to rent control, you have the right to raise the rent. David Mesharim does not specify whether in his time that itself was against the Din of Malchus Adina or not. So I don't know what he would hold in such a case. But in theory, if the Malchus says you can't raise the rent, if the Malchus says even if there is a Heskim, for whatever reason it is, they don't want people to be able to waive it, then if you hold Din of Malchus Adina, you'd be stuck. Very good. We'll get to that. So far we have the Dovid Mesharim that says it's Pasha, you say Dina Malchus Adina, it's a good takana, it's a takana that's needed, and we certainly will say Dina Malchus Adina. Imre Yosher is Masupik. He agrees that it's a good idea, he agrees that it's a good takana, but he does say that Lamais and Halacha, there's a suffix whether the Malchus can make a takana where there's no Hanoas HaMelech, and therefore he says it's a suffix, but Masupik, he says, his Noita, it still is enforceable. The Chavetel Sasharon takes the other extreme. Chavetel Sasharon says this takana is straight out communist theft, because it's true it's a takana. It helps anyone who's in a unit, and is now this is a wonderful rule because now you're protected. They can't raise your rent, but for every tenant that you're helping, there's a prospective tenant. There's someone out there who's homeless or who's looking to move into the area who will not be able to, because his landlord is stuck and cannot evict this person. And therefore, it's a takana lezeh, it's a rebach lezeh, and a hefsek lezeh. So if the government to go ahead and start picking winners and picking losers, he says that's not called takana, it's meneha medina, and he says it is not a good takana. He adds that these rules, everyone knows, he says they were inspired by the communists and the socialists. It was just a back way of getting in some communism into the United States. And he says it is not a good takana.
What?
We got to that. It's interesting. There are some other tshuvas published in Hamar, and there were I don't know who the authors were. There are different rabbanim. I didn't recognize any of the names, but they go through about how this is. He said they say it's mamash like paray, where he's told Klal Yisrael, that's it. I'm not giving you any of the raw material, but you have to keep on putting out the same quota, the same amount of bricks. He said every year they raise your taxes. Every year they have more rules. You have to give more steam, more heat, and all of the landlord's expenses are going up. But he can't raise his rent. He said you end up losing over time. You can end up losing money, and there's a number of very strong tshuvas attacking the fairness of these rules and saying that this is not dina malchus adina, this is not takanas minhag medina, this is a chamsanusa, and these places can all reject the idea of rent control. We'll get there. So now we have three extremes. We have a David Mesharim that says it's a great rule. Everyone agrees the Dima Chuzudin, you can't even say Kimbley. We have a Chavetel Sasharim that says it's a bunch of Ganovim. It's a terrible rule, and it's not Takaras Meheb Medina, it's not Hanas HaMelech, and it's clearly rejected. And we have a Imre Yosher that's Mesupik. He seems to agree that it's a good rule, but he's Mesupik in Halacha, and he ends up enforcing it because it involves karka. Now, if you look at the tshuvas carefully, what's interesting is they're focusing on completely different aspects of the law. Then Rabbi Yosher is talking about, this is between the world wars, Europe was in shambles, there was a tremendous shortage of housing, and without some sort of rules, without some sort of protections, there would be no stability. There was a lot of stress. There was a shortage, and you'd have constant turnover. People would never know where they would be the next day. And because of this crisis, because of this issue, they needed to deal with it, and they created the rent control rules. The Hamar and the Chavtel Sasharon, I mean, it's less clear than Metzias, is talking about in the United States. Talking about a situation where there was no shortage of apartments. And what was happening is you had people who were taking advantage of rent-controlled apartments to live there at a fraction of the fair market value. The expenses of the landlord were going up and up and up. And they were stuck. Because this tenant would refuse to move out, they stayed there for years, for decades, they were taking a tremendous loss relative to the market value of the apartment. Based on that, they make the very reasonable conclusion: this is not a takanas ben hamedina, this is a terrible rule, and dina malchus adina will not apply. Now this leads us to two basic questions. What do you do with a law that's reasonable, It's fair. In general, it helps out people. But like almost every law, you have some cases that are problems. There are always unintended consequences. There always will be some situations where there's an unjust result because of this law. Do we say, because of these few cases, throw out the whole law? Do we say no? Because in most cases it is just, it's a good law, and these few people never have to suffer. Or do we say, judge each case for itself? So over here there's a chiddush from Rav Henkin, where he says you follow the Rav. If this law is the Takanos B'nei HaMedina, and Taka is, in general, it's a helpful law, in general, it makes things better. The fact that you will have some cases that come out in, you know, an unwanted result, he says we will follow the Rav, and since the Rav is a good rule, then we would say Dina Malchusa Dina. So based on this psak, we would have to look at the law and just, I guess, take a poll. Is this law in general helping things, or is it in general hurting things? So that's the first point. Now the second point is that what happens, and this seems to be the case in rent control, if when they passed the laws, there was a need for it. It was pre-war Europe, or between the wars, there was a tremendous problem, there was a tremendous need, they had to pass the laws. Now over time, Baruch Hashem, things got better. The country's rebuilt, the shortage went away. But, as typically happens in politics, once there's a law on the books, nothing happens. No one gets up there, you know, no politician wants to get up there on the record and say, let's get rid of rent control. It's just not a politically astute move. There are a lot more tenants than there are landlords. And therefore, it ends up just staying on the books and outliving its useful life. So the Chavetz Chaim HaSharon says that even if you're going to tell me that at the time that the Imre Yosher wrote his tshuva, it was a good law, he said that was then. But today, where we are, it makes no sense. Today, it is not the Takanos B'nei HaMedina, and he says, therefore, you have to throw it out. Minchas Yitzchok has a very interesting way of dealing with his situation. He says like this. He says, if when the law was passed, it was a good law, then everyone agrees, Dina D'Malchus Dina. And anyone who rented a house during that period in Europe would have these protections of Dina D'Malchus Dina. Over time, things change. But Zakdim Minchas Yitzchok, once people get used to the idea, and once this becomes the de facto minog, this is how you do business. Every landlord knows, once he has a tenant, once the guy has his foot in the door, he's stuck for life. And until this tenant moves out, whether you pay him off or however you get him out of the house, you are stuck with him. 3% a year raises, that's it, whatever the laws are. Zakim Michas Yitzchak, even if at some point the idea of Dina Malchus Dina falls away, but if it was there long enough, it will create a minog. It'll establish a norm. And once there is a minog, once this becomes the expectation, this becomes part of the bargain, and therefore and the parties will be bound to it, even if, al sinah d'malchus d'dinah, you can't enforce it. And therefore, the Minchas Yitzchok comes out that in such a case, you'll follow it not because of dinah malchus d'dinah, but rather because of minhag. What? So the Igros Moshe has a very interesting tshuva where he was asked about rent control. And it seems that the person asking the question had a whole pilpul about the rules of dinah malchus d'dinah. And Mestamah went through, the different shitas, arkois, a whole back and forth. So Igros Moshe starts his tshuva by saying, I don't want to respond to your question about Dina Malchus Dina for two reasons. First of all, it's a very difficult sugya. There are many different machloksim about what the gedarim are, where you do apply it, where you don't apply it. And second of all, he says, we live in America, we have to have tremendous takaras atoyev to the malchus, and to start debating whether we should listen to the laws, we do have to listen to the laws, we don't have to listen to the law, that itself is a zilus of the malchus. And he says, I don't want to get into that. But, I think your whole question missed the boat. Because today, whether or not Dina Malchus Dina is true as a matter of halach, since today it became the minhag, since the expectation is that you can't kick someone out and you're going to follow whatever the rules are, he says, therefore, a minhag is a minhag, and it is binding even if there's no Dina Malchus Dina whatsoever. What's the nafkamina? So you have a few interesting nafkaminas. The first is, in the Igros Moshe's case, is what happens if a person moved into the unit before the law was passed. So if you're arguing that you're entitled to this protection. Or let's say they changed the law while you're already there. So if there's dina malchus adina, so the same way they made the original law, they can change the law. And even if you moved in before the law, now that they passed the law, you have the protection, dina malchus adina. Masha ein kein, if your whole basis is minhug, so if you moved in before the minhug, that means when you moved in, your rights were defined by the time where you signed the contract, and we can't change your rights based on it afterwards. In addition, if they want to change the laws, if the law changes, if we're going with minhug, the minhug doesn't change. I mean, eventually it may change, but since your relationship, your contract, your deal with him was pre the change, you can't be forced to switch. Another potential nafkamina is whether you're allowed to waive your rights. According to, if you hold the point over here is minhug, if the parties agree they're not going to follow the minhug, they certainly have the right to do that. If the issue here is dina de malchus adina, there already it's not so pasha. There you can argue that if the law gufa is it can't be waived, which I believe is the law. So if you hold dina malchus adina, perhaps the parties can't waive it. But be that as it may, the Igros Moshe says forget about the rule of dina malchus adina. This is enforceable simply because of the fact that it is a minhug and you're bound to it. Now another halacha that will come out if the difference between dina malchus adina and minhug is what happens, and this is ma'isim b'cholyon, that everyone knows there's something called rent control. Everyone knows the basic rules, how much you're allowed to raise the rent, under what basic terms you're allowed to evict the person. What happens if there's a dispute? And if you call a lawyer, he goes through the law books, and he comes up with a technicality, or he comes up with some obscure law that people didn't know about. So if you're entitled to rent control protection because of dina de malchus adina, whatever the din is, that's what it is. So whether this is a famous law or not a famous law, if you go look at the books, your lawyer comes back and shows you that under this case you have certain protections. Be entitled to. Masha ein kein, if you're relying on minhug can only be what people know about. If people know that 5% a year is the cap, so that was the minhug to accept the 5%. If there's some strange example, strange case, which no one ever thought about, or no one ever realized, no one ever would even knew that such distinctions existed, and punkt your lawyer digs it up, that will not change the minhug. And there you would not, and there you would go with whatever the norm, whatever the expectation is, not the technicality is on the books. We don't know what the particular case was. But the question was basically seemed to be asking, does dina malchus adina apply to rent control? And his response was, dina malchus adina either does or doesn't. I don't want to talk about it. Irrelevant. But he was saying today there is a minhug, and therefore when you move in, this is the expectation, and this is what you have to follow. Okay, your second point is well taken, which is why the recordings are not being posted this week. But as far as the first point, one of the themes that runs through Dina de Malchus Adina, and really go back to the point we made in the first year, legally, the law is the law. And you want to break a law and say, my rabbi says, no Dina de Malchus Adina, it's not going to get you very far. Our question is whether when a person violates a law in a civil matter, whether he's being over a halacha as well, whether he owes the money or not. And for that, we saw clearly that there is no, you know, there's no across-the-board automatic deferment to a law. if the law fits with certain criteria, if the government, for example, would decide to discriminate, they want to tax a certain person or a certain group of people differently than others. It may be a law. Now, in the United States, you can do it, but in many countries, you were able to do it. The king could do what he wants. Halacha would say, it's very nice the king said, this person has to pay the money, but that's unfair. And if the person can avoid paying it in a way where he will survive, he has not done anything wrong from a halacha point of view. And the same thing is true here as well. If there's a law which is unfair, which you have a democratic assembly, and they make a very simple political cheshbon, there are more tenants than landlords, and therefore we're going to pass the law that helps the tenants because they have more votes. If halacha would consider that unfair, then someone who can avoid being subject to those rules has not violated any halacha. He certainly violated a law. He will certainly get into trouble if he gets caught. In cases where there is a kpeda, we said from the Chazon Ish, there also we will extend the rulings of Din Malchus HaDin to an extent. But if it's basically unfair, halacha doesn't recognize it. Lahavdil, I mean, if you want to deal with the liberal approach, an African-American going in front of a bus was illegal for periods in our history. Someone who did that, was he doing something wrong? So it was illegal, but I don't know today if many people would at least publicly argue that it was wrong. Halacha has its own standards and doesn't automatically defer to what the majority rule did. No. What you're saying is the process is wonderful. And as far as Dina Malchus HaDina, there's no differentiation between whether it's a Democrat, whether it's a king, whether it's, as we pointed out, there are achroidim that apply Dina Malchus HaDina to the king during the times of the Inquisition. The point is we are not addressing or attacking a way of government. Our question is any particular law, does that have a halacha basis, is violating a law, violating a halacha, and that you have to look at each law separately. The fact you have a wonderful machlus with a bad law, or a bad machlus with a wonderful law, doesn't change it. We look at each law, each takana, and say, is this the Tevas Menehem Medina or not? Rabban Yoyin does say that in a case where the machlus says you must follow this rule, we will give it greater kayach because there is a kepeda. But today, where the norm is the government doesn't care, what you do privately is your own business, we certainly will look at each rule and see whether it's a Tevas Menehem Medina or not. What?
If you out and out steal from someone, they certainly care.
Well, if you were out and out steal from someone, but the two of you decide that instead of going to court, you're going to go to arbitration, you're going to flip a coin, and whoever wins the civil, we're talking about civil. Once it's not civil anymore, there the Reina Yoina will very likely apply. Because they're telling you, we don't want you overriding it. We don't want you following your own rules. That is a case where the machlus is makbe. That's a whole different story. That is the Chazon Ish's point. That any time where the machlus cares, they don't want you privately ignoring it. And they make that clear. There, Rabbeinu Yoyna says that we will say dina machlus adina. It's only civil matters. You two people have a dispute. Who owes who how much money? Where you want to follow civil law, you can do that. You want to flip a coin. You want to arbitrate based on whatever rules you want, there is absolutely no kepeda, you're not doing anything wrong, there we would not apply Dina Malchus HaDina, unless it is this Takanas Menehem Medina. Now what this means is that based on this Igros Moshe, every time we discuss Dina Malchus HaDina, even if it doesn't meet the strict criteria, you always have to see, has it been around long enough, has it established a minhag? And in many cases it will. Because most people, especially since they're dealing with both Jews and non-Jews, most people over time they expect to be following the laws, and therefore even in every case where even if for some reason there's no Dina Malchus HaDina, very often there will be a minhag, and you'll have to look at it at each case for itself. And you know, this is always an issue whenever there's a question of Dina Malchus HaDina. Now the Chavetz Chaim addresses this concept, this idea of minhag as well. And he says like this. He says, what would be, I'll give you a mashal, this is not his. What would be if you go to a store one day, you buy items worth $100, And then as you're walking out, there's a fellow with a gun standing there telling you, okay, you got to give the store owner another $10. Okay, standing there with a gun, you have no choice. You hand the store owner $10 and you walk out. Next day, you have to go shopping again. So you go to a different store. And sure enough, after you finish on your way out, there was another fellow standing there with a gun. All right, I want you to pay another $10. And for the next few years, every time you go shopping, someone's there, it's an armed guard, forcing you to pay an extra $10 for no reason on your way out. One day you go shopping, and you're wet, there's no guard there. So you pay the $100 and you leave. The store owner calls you back and says, wait a second, you owe me $10. He says, what are you talking about? It's a minhug. Every time you came, you paid me this extra money, so it became a minhug. Zogdei Chavetz Chaim HaShon, is that obviously not? That's not a minhug. The pshat is there's an anos, there's a guy with a gun. So the minhug is when there's someone sitting there with a gun, you pay him. But if he's not there, it didn't change the way we do business. It's simply something that you did because you had absolutely no choice. Zog the Chavetz El Sasharon, and again, he's going l'shitasai. This whole rule was a bunch of communist-inspired rules done for politicians pandering to the masses. It made no sense from the beginning. He says, that's true. Even if you can show that people very often were forced to follow it, since it was unfair from day one, he says that is a case of an anos, that is a case that's called coercion, and there we would not say that it creates a minhug, and if at some point the landlord is able to avoid these rules, he has a tenant that's an erlich tenant, the Chavetz El Sasharon says even minhug will not apply, and you would not have to follow the rent control laws. Oh, exactly. So Michas Yitzchak makes this point. He says, even if today you don't like it, since back then it was reasonable, it was a legitimate law. It wasn't the guy with a gun. Once it's a legitimate law, if that changes your expectations, he says it creates a minhag. The Chavetz El Sasharon is really going that from day one it was Ayidei Oynus, and that's why he arrives at this conclusion. The Gros Moshe is less clear, because if he's to the extent that he says I'm not dealing with Dina Malchus Adina, it implies even if it was never Dina Malchus Adina, it still is enough to create a minhag. So you have to know what the Gros Moshe held. It's true. If you probably would look at each place when they passed the law, whether it was a legitimate response to a problem, or as the Chabad Tzel Sasharon says, a communist inspired legislation. Now again, in Halacha L'maisa, it's something which there's, as you saw, a lot of back and forth. It would seem in most cases where there's just some sort of reasonable cap to stop landlords from taking advantage of a tenant that once he moves in just to jack up the price above the fair market value, that is probably Tavis B'nei HaMedina. And I know in Lakewood, many of the poskim do insist on, do force people to follow the rent control rules. In extreme cases, where for some reason it's way behind the market value, there already it's less clear. Because to go ahead and to tell someone he has to accept a fraction of the fair market value of the rent because of such laws is questionable whether it's really a Takanas B'nei HaMedina. But just the idea that raises have to go slowly or stopping people from going above the market value simply because they already have a captive audience, that already is something which is probably Takanas B'nei HaMedina, and I think most poskim would go with it. And we have a number of other cases which we were supposed to get to today, bankruptcy, intellectual property, but I guess we'll have to deal with that next week.